You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Future of Flushing. I'm Vito Calisi. With me is Jonathan Barron. And today we have another returning guest on the show, live from Port St. Lucie at the Mets Get Ready Camp. It's Paul Gervais. Paul, we spoke to you at Brooklyn last year, and that was just the beginning of what turned out to be an incredible season for you. But just to start off, what is it like being in PSL right now? How's Get Ready Camp going?
It's great. Vibes are high. All the guys are in here getting ramped up, getting ready for the season. I think everyone's just trying to focus on staying healthy and getting ready to have a big time 2024 season.
So, Paul, I guess you could say the offseason's kind of over for you guys. You're down there in PSL. You're working. Talk about your offseason. What was it like, especially after such a great 2023 season? What were some of the things that you worked on this past offseason?
My offseason was awesome. It was I split my training time mainly between I was at LSU for a good amount of it, and then I was at home in North Carolina for a good amount. The main thing that I worked on was definitely command, as you probably could have guessed, just like trying to be more consistent, throwing fastball slider over the plate, and then developing my splitter more so where I can use it as a legitimate weapon this year. And that's been coming along pretty nicely, so I'm excited about that. And yeah, so just pretty much everything for me just centers around command. I feel like if I throw my best stuff, then it's not going to get hit. So it's just all about throwing it over the plate for me.
So, Paul, what's it like to be back in PSL right now and just getting back to work with some of your teammates? I know you said Blade Tidwell is just a few feet away from you. Some other guys are over there right now. How's it to be back with the fellas?
Oh, it's awesome, man. I love hanging out with the guys. Blade, Stu, C. Scott, Dom, Mike, like all these guys, we've all been hanging out, you know, just enjoying the area, enjoying the warmth, except for C. Scott. He's from here, but so we're all just enjoying the weather and, you know, having a good time. Playing putt-putt tomorrow together, just all that stuff.
So John and I are going to be coming down there in a few weeks. What are some things we can look forward to doing? Like, what are you doing in your free time that is good for any fan coming down for spring training to know?
What fans are doing in their free time is probably a lot different than what we are doing. We're playing a lot of Madden, just hanging out. I guess we go to Pop Stroke a lot. That's a good spot. We go to Longhorn Steakhouse. We go there a lot to eat. It's a good spot. Outside of that, I think Stu and Cam Foster play a lot of pickleball. Like, but other than that, I don't really know.
Oh, I like to hear that.
Vito and I need to get on the pickleball court. Vito and I, that's one thing I've been meaning to tell you, Vito. You and I have a date with some pickleball when we're together down in PSL.
Paul, do you play pickleball? Because, I mean, with your wingspan, I feel like you would crush the kitchen.
I've played like once or twice. I'm not like incredible at it, but it does come decently naturally because I feel like I'm a decent athlete. So it's not terribly hard.
I feel like it's the kind of game that if you can move laterally, it's good for everybody. I feel like that's why it's taken off in popularity. Paul, you mentioned a lot of guys you were on the Rumble Ponies with last year. Of course, you started the season in Brooklyn. You wound up in Binghamton. You guys had an incredible run. You beat Somerset in the playoffs. Just talk about that experience, and especially for you, coming in after Dom Hamill's gem in game two and getting the last five outs in that game and going through some really, really good Somerset Patriots bats. Just talk about all that.
Oh, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Once I got to Binghamton, just to, like, settle in with all the guys, it was a lot of fun. Going in every game, it was pretty much one or two runs or less on the board every time I'd come in because our starting rotation was unbelievable. So it was a lot of fun just to, like, challenge ourselves to continue to hold the lead every time it was close. And then when you're following up Blade or Dom or Stu or C. Scott or Moreno, any of those guys, when they were shoving, it was important that you held it. You didn't want to be the guy that blew the lead. And once we faced Somerset, I mean, crap, that game was so much fun. That was one of the best pitching performances I'd ever seen. Dom was just lighting it up, and the bullpen, we were just stretching, staying ready, and they called my name. And I think I came in runner on third, two outs, and I was like, there's no way I'm messing up Tom's shutout right now. So try to get that guy out. And then once we got into the ninth, it was just one batter at a time. And thankfully, I was able to get it done. And we got to pop some bottles. It was super fun.
I was watching the game, and I actually went back to watch the final out. You shook Augustin Ramirez out looking. And there was one thing that stood out to me from that sequence. You brought your hands to the belt, and you kept them there seemingly a little bit longer than you usually do. And you took a deep breath, and then you fired a fastball that you froze him with completely, strike three, game over. And I was watching this morning, and I was wondering when I saw that, what was going through your mind in that very moment? It looked like a very cerebral, calm moment, and then you just threw the ched, and you totally froze him, and the ponies advanced.
Throw the ball over the plate no matter what. Don't walk him because the tying run was on deck. It was 3-2. I was like, I got to throw a strike right here. That was pretty much it. I wasn't really thinking too analytically. I was just like, hey, throw it over the plate. Maybe let my defense work or punch him out. And I think that was – I think originally Sanger put down fastball and I shook. And he just looked at me and he put down fastball again. And I was like, oh, okay. And I threw a fastball, and it worked.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Strikeouts were anything but a rarity for you last year. Your 38.6% strikeout rate was tied for seventh among all minor league pitchers with at least 50 innings pitched. That's a pool of 1,296 pitchers. Did you just feel something clicked for you this year because you were absolutely filthy?
Yeah, it was I think the biggest thing was, first of all, people were pretty off balance because you never knew kind of what you were going to get. And during spring training last year, I was anything but nasty. I couldn't throw my slider for a strike to save my life. And it was like my last outing of – spring training, I FaceTimed one of my pitching coaches that I had like talked to my whole life. And I was like, dude, give me a slider grip right here. Like, I got nothing working for me. And he goes, here, try this. And then it was nasty in that outing. So then I just kind of used the same thing throughout the year. And I think having two true offerings, and then given the fact that it's very different facing someone who's my height and hitters don't really ever see that, I think helps. And, throw enough strikes, and thankfully I was able to put together a pretty good year.
On top of being dominant, especially generating swings and misses, and I don't want you to take this as a jinx because it's not, we don't believe in jinxes here on Future of Flushing.
Me neither.
But you allowed just one home run. I think you know where I was going. You allowed just one home run in 57 innings of work last year between single A and double A. So how were you so effective in keeping the ball in the park?
I mean, I don't know. I gave up three in spring training last year. Like I said, it was brutal. But I think once the season came in, my biggest thing was, dude, like, I don't really know. I just kind of throw it. And if they don't hit home runs, it's pretty sweet. I'm trying to think. I try to work above the belt, and I get a lot of swing to misses up there. But, yeah, dude, I'm trying to think of, like, I mean, I don't throw a sinker. I don't throw any, like, traditional pitches that, like, don't give up homers. I was able to miss bats a good enough amount, and they didn't hit homers, which was sweet. And the homer I gave up was on a splitter, which I threw like 3% of the time last year. So that was really frustrating, but that would be the one pitch I'd want back from last year. And then, other than that though, yeah, I mean, I just don't really try not to give up homers, especially when you're closing. Like, that can make or break the game. Usually, if I give one up. So, yeah, I wish I could give you some big analytical answer, but I don't really know.
Well, I wish I didn't have my dog Cooper here over my shoulder barking, getting involved. So I apologize for that. I was hoping this wasn't going to happen, but hopefully he's a good boy the rest of the interview.
Well, Paul, you don't just pitch well, but you also pitch effectively, and you also go out there for innings. I mean, you recorded at least six outs, 15 times last year. Two outings with nine or more outs recorded. How do you feel you've grown in that role, and how do you feel about the endurance you've built up?
Yeah, that was one thing that they really highlighted for us relievers at the beginning of the year, is the ability to get span across multiple innings and maybe even see the lineup more than once. So they want us to be able to not only just be a seventh, eighth, ninth inning guy, but to be able to, if the starter gets knocked out early, to be able to cover two, three, four innings if we can, and stay effective throughout that. So if I continue to maintain my stuff through each inning, they would keep sending me back out there. But for me, it was like when I was in college, it was all about seventh, eighth, ninth inning. That was it. Like that, those were going to be the innings I would come in the game. And once I got here, I got to learn how to cover not only the end of the game, but the beginning and middle, and be able to use my stuff effectively more than one time through the order.
So when you do go out there and you retire the side in order, and then Skip says, hey, you're going to face the next three, and you go back to the dugout, how do you keep your mind fresh? Is that a challenge to sit, kind of cool off, and then go back out there and heat up again?
Yeah, I kind of just – I'll look at, like, who the next couple hitters are due up with the pitcher, with the pitching coach I'm at. And then normally I'll just kind of sit down, and then when there's like one or two outs in the inning, I'll get on the fence and kind of like watch the game, cheer my teammates on. Because I'm not big on, like, you know, a lot of pitchers have like the zone. Like, I'm not going to be just sit there and like have no one talk to me, because I think that's kind of eyewash. Like, I just kind of go up there and cheer on my teammates. And then when it's my turn, I just go out there. I actually got a funny story. When in that Somerset, the finals, I got the last guy out in the eighth inning. And then during when we were hitting in the top of the ninth, I'm up on the top step just talking to one of my teammates about something. And then Dom comes up to me. He's like, Paul, you got to focus. Like, what are you doing? I was like, dude, I got this, man. Like, I'm not just going to sit there and just think about the inning for the whole time. And then when I eventually got the guys out, he was laughing at me about after the game. So it's funny stuff.
You ready?
Showtime. On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Obviously, when you guys are pitching, you're not paying attention to what's going on the scoreboard. But one big thing in minor league baseball is the strikeout batter of the game. Do you ever take note of that?
I see it. It's more of a bigger thing with like our hitters. They'll get the thing, like it'll be them for the game, and they'll just like be like, "Oh crap!" Like we had this Jinx Amir in Brooklyn. Like we had a couple of guys that were the strikeout batter of the game when we would play in Hudson Valley, and they would all of them like end up striking out like one time or more, and they would all of them would like be like, "We need to talk to whoever's doing the PA system. Like, don't make me the strikeout hitter." It wasn't like, I guess we would hear it when we were pitching at home, but it wasn't, I didn't really register like anything with that. But the hitters, it was like a big thing. They were like, do not make me that batter, because it was like a jinx thing that they thought.
Last year's in the history books. We're looking forward to 2024. Tell us, what are your goals for this upcoming season? What is Paul Gervais seeking to accomplish in 2024?
I want to help the Mets win as much as possible, whether that's in Double A or Triple A or in the big leagues. That's my plan. Obviously, my goal is to make it to the big leagues this year and to stick, and not just be a guy that's like up and down. I want to make it, and I want to be good enough to stay there. But until that happens, my goal is to help the Binghamton Rumble Ponies or the Syracuse Mets or wherever I'm at, and help them win as many ball games as possible. Because, I mean, at the end of the year, my first two pro seasons, we've made it to the finals. It's just so much more fun when you win. The vibes in the clubhouse are so much better. So I would say my goal is always just win. And if the team's winning, that usually helps with personal success.
And that right there leads us to our next question, because in 2022, you were on the mound when the St. Lucie Mets celebrated a championship. And in 2023, there was another dog pile on top of Paul Gervais when the Rumble Ponies beat the Somerset Patriots. So is there something about you getting final outs in championship series, and can we expect that in 2024 possibly?
I hope so. Hopefully it happens in late October of 2024. But I like to think that goes along with it. I think it's a testament to my draft class in 22 and also the 2021 draft class, and how great we had, great people, and not only great people but great players, and we had a great blend of talent. We all got along, and they set the stage before we even got drafted in St. Lucie. They won the first half, and then our draft class, me, Blade, Kevin, Stu, like all those guys, we were able to help bring the championship home. And then in Binghamton, once a bunch of us got called up halfway through the year, we were able to help rally, win the second, or get second in the second half, clinch playoff spot, and then finish it off. So I just think we got a great group of guys, and it speaks to a testament of how great the Mets have drafted the last couple of years.
Paul, I want to ask you a completely non-baseball question now. Where you are right now, you share, I believe you probably share a parking lot with a restaurant you're familiar with, correct?
Oh, with Olive Garden? Yeah, it's right across the road.
Have you taken the boys there and been like, look, this used to be my domain?
I do. And then, like, I think they think I'm judging the server the whole time because, like, I'm, like, kind of noticing what they do. And then I have my little card from when I worked there, and then I get 25% off for everybody at the end, and it's electric.
Paul, I mean, me and John, we're going to be right across the street from there. I mean, I think we're going to hit you up to go get some bread bowls and some pasta Alfredo dishes while we're there.
Yes, sir. Sounds good, man. You let me know.
What was that? I couldn't see that card. What was just last
year? That was my Darden employee card, because it was that was like
a fair. Oh, this man's legit.
So I show him the card, and then I get the discount. It's pretty sweet.
Dude, do you tell other guys about that before you get there, or do you just drop that at the end of the meal? Because I feel like if I was on the team, I didn't know I was getting 25% off, and then Paul Gervais just dropped that, I would be ecstatic.
No, yeah. I mean, I told the first time I did it, it was me, Blade, and Tyler Stewart. And we went there, and I told them about it, and they, like, didn't believe me. And then I did it at the end, and we got it, and they were, like, freaking out. They were like, oh, let's go. They were fired up, so it was pretty cool.
Paul, which of your teammates do you think in one sitting could hammer the most free breadsticks and salad?
Blade. Definitely Blade. Blade can eat a lot of food, which, like, he's not, like, overweight or anything like that. I mean, the dude, he really takes care of his body, but he can put down food unlike anyone I've ever seen. Definitely Blade, for sure.
Paul, I do have one last question. Jaden Daniels, where does he rank amongst all the quarterbacks in the class? Let's hear it.
Number one. What type of question is that? That's the Heisman Trophy winner. He went to the best school in the country. He's number one.
I had a
feeling
you were going to say that. All right. I had a feeling you'd say that. We'll see how it goes. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you so much. I mean, that's the scouting report that I don't think anybody expected to get on Blade Tidwell in this interview. Thank you so much for just taking the time to sit down and talk with us. And it's just we're really excited to watch your journey continue and see what you do this year.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it.